Good evening and welcome to another episode of Nigeria Politics Weekly. As usual, my name is Michael and co-hosting with me is Phoenix. Today we have one guest. Our guest is Ilemona. Ilemona is a member of the People's Democratic Party. Now we're going to focus on one issue today, which is President Bola Tinubu's first month in office. And I'm going to be asking Phoenix and Ilemona on their thoughts on his performance. So first of all, I'll start with you, Phoenix. Phoenix, on the security front, do you think Bola Tinubu has done enough to show that he intends to secure the country and improve on the dire security situation we're currently in? Phoenix.
Hi, Michael. Hi, Ilemona. Thanks for joining us this week. Hello, listeners. I don't think so, because I haven't seen any clear plan. I mean, the most we've seen is that, yes, he has changed security chiefs. And my argument on that was that I would have wanted him to, give some time before rushing into doing that. Because, again, I've always believed that most of the failings that we had over the last 8 years was due to Buhari just not being up to the job. And Buhari recently changed security chiefs 2 years ago. Not that we have seen any improvement, but my argument was at least give them new terms of reference, give them new direction. Let's see if these guys even know what they're doing before you start changing security chiefs, as we know that always creates a wide sweeping retirement of senior officers with a lot of experience within the force and across the forces. So for me, that's the only thing that he has done. Beyond that, we haven't seen any clear direction. His appointment to the position of NSA doesn't fill me with a lot of excitement. I don't think that this guy has the resume or the background to do the job. Again, the jury is out. We'll see where that lands. So there's no concerted effort. There's no clear agenda. There's no clear plan as to, we've identified the threats. This is what we're doing. Let's energize the force and all of those things. And if we go back to his manifesto, he was also jumping on the bandwagon of, building up the police force, building up the armed forces. I haven't seen anything to show that. Now, it's early days, but you've changed security chiefs and you could have set the ball rolling with a lot of momentum by putting some clear action plans behind them. So as far as I'm concerned, I haven't seen anything that tells me that he's ready to take on the task.
Thank you, Phoenix. I just want to get some further clarification. So what specifically can he do? Because, as you said, various leaders have come in the past and changed security chiefs, but that doesn't seem to have improved the situation. So what, beyond changing the heads of the various agencies, what specific things can they do now, in your view, that they've not been doing before, that you think will improve the situation?
I think for me, it's a complete change of the thinking around security. We talked about it, whether it was last week or the week before, where we talked about, for example, one of the big issues that we have, to my mind, is the way the police force is ill-equipped, ill-manned to handle internal policing, the structure of the police force. So for me, for someone who announced during his inauguration speech, fuel subsidy is gone and stuck to his guns and fuel subsidy is gone, he could easily also have announced that, look, we are going to restructure the police. We are going to be pushing a bill to the National Assembly within the next week or next 2 weeks, blah, 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 to push for, a restructuring of the police force, to push for state police. That, to show that he wants to change significantly policing in the country, which will lead to more policemen, better equipped, better trained, better doctrine, clear framework, which then frees up the armed forces to go back to their constitutional duty. Again, making sure that those ones also receive the right, the right training and everything. So a clear framework that goes to the heart of the problems that we have. The second thing I would have also expected is a clear understanding of what are the security challenges that we have. Both the physical threats that we have, in the sense that, of course, we have ISWAP, we have banditry, we have all of this thing, but also the economic and social threats that we have around, you know, food security, around, you know, unemployment, all those kinds of things. A concerted plan to say, look, Nigeria, I'm declaring war on insecurity in this country, and I'm looking at all the root causes, and this is my action plan to do it. And in the absence of that, and that's part of what I challenge him on in terms of in the last 1 month. You know, there's all these appointments of special advisors and all these kinds of things, but there doesn't seem to be a lot of, you know, intellectual rigor to some of the things that are happening. It's just like, look, let's just make these high level announcements. Let's sign these different things. But you see, the clear plan that shows that this was thought through, these were the options that we took, and this is how we intend to implement, is not coming through. And that's my challenge. That's the issue I have with them. So there are clear things you can do around security that show a very clear direction and where you intend to go.
Thank you, Phoenix. So I was having a malfunction with my connection. Ilemona, there's the issue I was going to talk to you about is two-part. On the one hand, there were reports a few days ago that there were attacks in Benue State, killing scores of people. Some say they were armed bandits, some say they were terrorists, some say they were herdsmen. Nobody knows who they were, but scores of people in villages across Benue were killed. And I know that you're from Benue. And the second part is Amnesty International recently announced, their country director said, since Bola Tinubu came into office on the 29th of May, over 120 people have been killed by terrorists or armed bandits. And being someone from Benue State, what are the people feeling? Are they feeling optimistic that this new government can address their security problems, or are they basically hopeless, Ilemona, or feeling hopeless?
Hi Phoenix, hi Michael, hi viewers, listeners. Small correction, I'm from Kogi, very small correction. My mom is from Benue, I'm also from Benue, but you know we live in a patrilineal society, so if I have to fill a form, I would write, for state of origin, I would write Kogi State. A really small correction. That said, I think that Amnesty International understates what has gone on since the 29th of May. In Plateau alone, in Plateau State alone, more than 150 people have been killed since Bola Tinubu got sworn into office. In Benue State, that number is approaching 100. In the southern parts of Kaduna State, that number is also approaching around 100. A conservative estimate that I have seen says around 400 people have been killed in terrorist attacks. And it doesn't matter whether they're herdsmen, it doesn't matter whether they're yeah, Boko Haram, they're all terrorists. Really, anybody who organizes, seeks funding, purchases equipment and ammunition, and attacks people and kills them, these numbers, they're all terrorists. So we've had a concerted wave of terrorist attacks. Now, someone might say early days, you know, in the life cycle of the administration, but people are dying. So it's really not early days. We can't afford to say it's early days when people are dying in such monumental numbers. It really is not early days. We were expecting, and it was a little glimmer of hope, but it was hope all the same, that there would be a rapid change from the deliberate inertia of the past. Now, having seen a naming of security, new security chiefs, having seen a clearing out of the top echelon of the military, having seen, you know, all of that, there was the hope that there'll be a renewed vigor towards protecting the lives, welfare, and well-being of the average Nigerian, particularly in these troubled areas. These areas have been troubled, have suffered consistently over the last 10 years, over the last, you know, 8 years. There was a report I saw that more than 63,000 people were killed in terrorist attacks during the lifetime of former President Buhari's administration. A large number of those people were concentrated in states like, you know, in parts of the country like Southern Kaduna, like Benue, like Kogi, like Nasarawa, like Plateau. So we're expecting that, you know, for a president that made so much noise about how he was prepared, you know, to start leading from day one, we're expecting that from day one there'll be rapid change to the security situation in the country. If we are, sadly, unfortunately, what we're seeing, at least in this first era, in this first few days, what we're seeing is more of the same of the same. It's just a continuation of former President Buhari's ineptitude in Asia and his deliberate wickedness towards the people of these states in these regions.
Thank you, Ilemona. And in your view, is it because Bola Tinubu does not have the capacity to solve the problem, or is it that he does not care? What are you alluding to?
From the, like, the, you know, on the day that we heard, last time I was on your show, I said this, I don't believe that he has the capacity to solve any of Nigeria's problems. The early days are an indication, you know, that I'm right in my belief. I don't believe he has the capacity to solve our security issues. I don't believe he has the capacity to solve our economic issues. I don't believe he has the capacity to solve our diversity issues. If anything, steps he's taking so far, and the steps that are being taken on his behalf, that he's not rebuking or repudiating, are indicative of this disability, of this incapacity. So I have no, I don't have any belief at all whatsoever, in any shape, form, or manner whatsoever, that he has the capacity to resolve our issues.
Thank you, Lemona. Let me come to Phoenix on this security issue. So Phoenix, there's this former militant from the Niger Delta, Asari Dokubo. Asari Dokubo alleges that the APC government gave him the contract to secure the Abuja-Kaduna highway. And he said since he and his men got that contract, security on that highway had improved and people are now traveling by road. Because if you remember, there was a point where the Abuja-Kaduna highway was basically an open invitation to be kidnapped if you travel down that route. So doesn't at least Bola Tinubu get credit for this, for the fact that the Abuja-Kaduna highway is now safe, Phoenix?
How does he get credit for entrusting security to an ex-militant, to a private individual? So what's the use of his commander-in-chief tag that he has, that his own security forces cannot secure the territory of the Federal Republic of Nigeria and needs to be outsourced to a private establishment to handle it? He can't get any credit for that. So what was the basis for changing the security chiefs? He might as well have left them there or even decided that I don't need security chiefs since he can hire the likes of Dokubo and people of that ilk to manage security across the country. That's an acceptance of failure of imagination, failure of being able to put in place the right structure, the right programs to be able to successfully defend the country. So he can't get any credit for that. Credit for what?
Let me bring in, for writing a check, let me bring in Ilemona. Ilemona, your party, the PDP, adopted the same approach. So from President Yar'Adua to Jonathan, and I think the APC government continued, was they got militants from the Niger Delta to secure the pipelines and guarantee the regular pumping of oil. And President Goodluck Jonathan, a PDP president, also hired mercenaries from South Africa to help in the defeat of Boko Haram at that time, around 2013, 2014. So do you agree with Phoenix that somehow the use of militants to secure the Abuja highway is a sign of failure when your party more or less did the same thing?
If I remember correctly, at the times when these militant contracts, these contracts were awarded, when President Goodluck Jonathan awarded these contracts to militants in the Niger Delta, at the time, they didn't work unilaterally. If I remember correctly, they worked in tandem with the military, if I remember correctly, on the one hand. On the other hand, if I also remember correctly, their job roles were restricted, very restricted in their scope. They were restricted to pipeline surveillance, monitoring, and security. They did not extend to general security. Preventing kidnapping and terrorist attacks, less than 200 kilometers away from the state capital, no less, is general security. So in the approach, so to speak, the pipeline protection contract was very different from what's been given to Asari. Now, what is different is what bears some sort of similarity, if I remember correctly, was the use of mercenaries. But it's also different because they were, again, engaged in tandem with the military. They were also, again, restricted in their scope of activity. They were restricted strictly to the theater of war. This is, again, different from what's going on here. We have a militant organization that has taken positions against the existence of the Nigerian state on many occasions. Asare Dokubo is a wanted fugitive for positions he took against the Nigerian state. If you Google, you'll see a place where he declares himself head of state of Biafra or something of that sort. So that exists. And then you put him here in our nation's capital, in civilian civilian territory, in general territory, not in the theater of war, not with specific restriction to pipeline surveillance and monitoring. Then we come to the much bigger issue. And my position during President Goodluck Jonathan's time is the same. I do not think that people should get these contracts. I don't think that people should. I think that we should be in a place where we're able to empower our military and our paramilitary agencies to do these things. The money that you're using to pay these people in billions of naira can be applied towards the protection or towards the empowerment, the improvement of the nation's armed forces. Why don't we just do that? That has far better long-term consequences for the entire nation than empowering private contractors, many of whom have past that are steeped in crime and criminality. So it bothers me in many respects. Now, what are Asare Dokubo's credentials for assuming a contract of this nature? His only credential is that he supported President Bola Tinubu. That's his only credential. He's a militant who has had access or who has been able to smuggle into this country all sorts of restricted weapons, and who has been declared as a wanted fugitive by Nigerian security agency who, in the build-up to the elections, calculated, hedged his bets in favor of one person. And that's all. It's even worse still when we see that he's being used as a tool to set up or to stoke the embers of the flames around our diversity and to cause disunity. So when you're putting that sort of person in that sort of role, so close to the nation's city cap, the city center, also remember, none of the other people, neither militants in Delta at the time, correct me if I'm wrong, but if I remember correctly, but also and the mercenaries in the Northeast at the time took active positions against the military, active public positions against the security agencies. Asare Dokubo is holding the Nigerian security agencies, labeling them terrorists, accusing them of participating in subterfuge against the Nigerian state, and so on. In such a position, the commander-in-chief should be erring on the side of his security agencies, not empowering a person who has accused his security agencies of all manners of complicity in the breach of law and order. It makes me wonder.
Hello, Ilemona, are you there? We seem to have lost you.
I'm done.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm sure the listeners will reach their own conclusions. But because of time, we must head to the next topic, which is on the economy. So, Phoenix, I've been reading newspapers over the past few days, and they all seem to be optimistic about Bola Tinubu's plans. They talked about the fact that he's floated the currency, he's removed the subsidy, and that these were things that many reformers were calling for, and he's done that. The currency is now floating, the subsidy is gone, and everybody seems to be hopeful that these things will improve the Nigerian economy. So, in your view, Phoenix, is Bola Tinubu doing the right things on the economy?
He's done a few high-level things, but to my mind, there's clearly more that needs to be done. You don't do certain things without having a clear what's next to follow. Because, I mean, in as much as they are the right things and things that I've been asking for 8 years, there was always the fact that, look, you don't toy with the economy for a country of 200 million people, like, you know, just make pronouncements, do things and expect that, oh, everything is going to be fine. Yes, subsidy had to go, but we all knew that in removing subsidy, it wasn't to be done abruptly. It was to be done with a clear plan because you knew that there would be an impact on people. So yes, you would say subsidy is gone, it is what it is, but how do you then, you know, ensure that it doesn't then constrict the economy? Because if all of a sudden fuel prices jump significantly to take a big chunk out of people's income, it has an impact on consumption, it has an impact on employment, on people's livelihoods and things like that. So you need to have, you know, thought through those things and put in place plans to get it done. I haven't seen anything to that effect, and we see what the impact is on the people. The currency thing, much needed, you know, and the right step again. But we see what's happening in the market because of what has happened in the past. Let's not forget the Nigerian government led by Buhari, who was an APC leader in 2016, announced that they were floating the currency. And then we saw them unwind that and go back to their multiplicity of rates. So of course, there's going to be people who doubt. And what you need to do is to follow up what you've done with clear action plans that say, look, that's a thing of the past. This is how we're going to move forward. But we're seeing that the market is still trying to find its way. We're seeing that the central bank hasn't played a role in establishing that, with also funding the market to some degree, so there's scarcity and all of those kinds of things. Hopefully it all sorts itself out as people begin to have confidence the longer that this remains, especially by the time we start pricing in into fuel. The fuel price, you know, takes into account the new FX rates and all of that, because you're going to see fuel prices go up again. If they can hold on to that and then have a clear plan, yes, you begin. So, you know, you talk about things like that have happened. You look at some of the talk around, you know, cleaning up the CBM, monetary policy, and all of those kinds of things. Number one, that's not the federal government's business. That's not government business. That's central bank business. So you need to let central bank sort out itself, make sure it has the right leadership. What they're doing with MFLA creates, challenges for the economy, because it creates uncertainty. He's been removed, or whatever you want to do. He's under arrest. There's an acting governor. It doesn't create certainty and clear, understanding for people. What is Wale Adun's role as a senior special advisor? So that creates challenges. You need stability. You need to make sure you deal with the MFLA issue, and you have a substantive head for the central bank, so that the central bank can chart its course and make sure it's doing its business, which I've always argued, go back and face your inflation remedy. That is your job. Your job is not to run the economy. Which then brings me to my big grouse, which is around, when are we going to get the Minister for Finance? For me, that should have been one of the first things that you should have been trying to do in month one, give us a clear, plan around who are the people who are going to be in charge of our economy. Yes, we know that constitutionally, the Vice President leads the National Economic Council, but that's a ceremonial rule as far as I'm concerned. Who are the people, who's your finance minister? Who are the people who are going to be running this show? You should have names already going to the Senate and have them, have somebody in place, especially with all these issues. So for me, that's a big gap. And then we see recently some of the conversations around tax and fiscal policy reform. You don't have a finance minister yet. You're putting in place a committee and appointing someone to go and lead, some of these things. The challenge is when you then appoint someone, if they don't agree, where do you go from there? So for me, there have been some, I would say, small hits, because the good things that have been done haven't been backed with clear, well thought plans that allow the good intent to take effect. And there have been clear misses, in the sense that you don't have your team in place, and so there's no clear direction at this point in time, and they're just moving from one, from one order to the other, and all of that. So you came into this job understanding the shortcomings of the Buhari regime, understanding that those 6 months that this guy was dilly-dallying at a time when the economy was going into uncertain times back in 2015. The people who were leaving office knew and had even planned for it that, yes, there's challenges. Oil price had crashed in 2014. So you needed to tighten your belt. We needed to have very clear fiscal policy direction. That chap came in, spent 6 months waffling around. All of those things led to the recession we saw thereafter. And from then on, it was all downhill for Nigeria. You've come in, you've seen how bad the last 8 years have been. You should have come in ready to hit the ground running and to work, ready to put people to work, ready to have clear direction. So making a few pronouncements, doing a few things, that's not what is required. What is required is very clear policies put into place, implemented with action plans that drive outcomes that are measurable, and that's not what I see. So, I mean, for me, on the economic front, if a few good things, on doing some of those things, but it's far from what is needed. It's not enough, nowhere near enough.
Thank you, Phoenix. Let me bring in Ilemona at this point. Ilemona, you've heard what Phoenix has had to say. So how would the PDP have done things differently? Because if I recall correctly, the PDP was also proposing to float the Naira. They were also proposing to get rid of subsidies. So how, why, or does the PDP agree with everything Bola Tinubu is doing? Or would they have done, are they somehow disagreeing?
We very vehemently disagree. Vehemently disagree. Not on the objective, on the process of achieving the objective. And I can begin one. I do not believe that, and there are many people in the PDP who do not believe that what we have, that we had the unification of the currency. What we had was a devaluation of the Naira. Let's simply put. They have already announced, without a new CBN governor, without a new minister of finance, and all of that, that they will maintain the list of prohibited items, 41 prohibited items listed as not available for Forex. Right? Now, as long as those 41 items exist, that list of 41 items exist, you do not have a unified currency. Because what will happen is that those people do not have access to Forex through your normal financial institutions. That means you straight away have dual rates still. We might not have as many rates as we had under former president, and goodness knows how it pleases me to say former president Buhari. We might not have as many rates as former president Buhari, but you do not have a unified rate. They should stop lying to the Nigerians. We don't have a unified rate. If you have a unified rate, everybody will be able to enter your banking system and get access to Forex through your proper formal channels. We don't. Now, if there's saying that on the list of 41 items, there's so many of those things that Nigeria doesn't produce. Nigeria does not have the capacity to produce. We don't produce rice in sufficient enough quantities. Why? One of the reasons why you have such high levels of food inflation is that rice is our most consumed staple. In addition to your insecurity and your other challenges, rice is our most consumed staple. If Nigerians cannot buy it, the simple economic principles of demand and supply, the demand far outstrips the supply. And yet, here we are insisting. But I digress. Two, subsidy removal. We also agreed with the objective. Oh, subsidy needed to go. It was a question of how. We were always going to come to office with a plan that said, if you removed subsidy, you were going to do XYZ to make sure that almost immediately you're going to have an inflow of maybe foreign direct investment in the country that will enable people to cushion the effect. One, two, we're never going to remove, stand at a presidential podium on in the middle of the speech and shout, oh, we have removed subsidies. It was always going to be gradual. It was always going to be phased. And so the plan had been to announce to Nigerian people that over a certain period of time, the subsidy would be gradually removed, to ensure that whatever policies we're going to implement to cushion the effects were already in place to make sure that the effects are not rabid. One of the things that people don't know is that already, if you had a millionaire in on the 28th of May, 2023, by the sheer account of Bola Tinubu's policies around the removal of subsidy, around this supposed unification of rates, around what they call this thing. Around those kinds of things, these policies, especially around these taxes that he's introducing on a daily basis, what you will see is that your 1 millionaire is no longer 1 millionaire. You'd be lucky if it's 600 or 700,000. I mean that in terms of value, not in terms of the sheer number of it. In terms of value, in terms of its purchasing power, it's no longer what it used to be. And so in his early days, what Bola Tinubu has done is shown us, again, cause for concern, cause for worry. You know, this thing where people safely ensconced in Aso Rock, where the Nigerian people bear every cost that day, every one of their living expenses, and then telling us we have to make sacrifices without them showing a commensurate level of sacrificing. It's just abominable, to be honest. It's just we rapidly, aggressively disagree. Subsidy had to go, yes, but we have planned a phased approach over a period of time to ensure that, you know, the effects are not as harsh as they currently are. The exchange rates had to be unified and brought into a single window. We currently don't have that. But what's more, there's no plan. He just announced it. He didn't have a series of steps. What he had was a move. He didn't have a plan. He's only just now, having done the move, trying to build a plan. Meanwhile, all over the country, people are suffering the harsh negative consequences of his plans. It's a shame, really.
Thank you, Ilemona. I want to expand the conversation by bringing Phoenix back in. So, Phoenix, we talked about the floating of the currency, and we talked about the subsidy. But then the other issue is, under the previous APC government of General Buhari, unemployment exceeded 30%. I'm not sure if new data has been released, but are you expecting unemployment to reduce, Phoenix, when the next results are released? Or do you think Bola Tinubu's policies as they are not going to significantly impact the unemployment crisis?
Well, I mean, typically, I mean, economic policies such as these take a while to take effect. But given the fact that, I mean, we've been talking about the fact that the policies are not robust enough. You don't have clear action plans around them. The ability for it to yield positive fruits, especially in the short term, is going to be limited. So I don't expect us to see a sudden turnaround in unemployment rate in the short term. Now, but they can still get it right, because you've done part of the difficult work, which is, okay, let's undo some of these things that have been holding back the economy. If you can then follow up with clear action, you know, like I said, with clear policy direction, with clear signaling that tells people that, okay, we're ready to do business in the right way, and continue in that vein. Yes, because the right investment will come in. Take for example, the rolling back of the excise tax that was being planned to happen. That's a step in the right direction, in the sense that, okay, this might actually hurt the economy, because you are hurting business owners who employ people. Let's take a step. Let's pause on that, you know, to allow us understand what's the best way to do it. So for me, you're not going to see an immediate turnaround, but there needs to be follow through on some of these actions for you to begin to see any movement of the needle. And let's make no mistake about it, 33% unemployment was captured, if I remember correctly, I think it was maybe 2021 or something like that, that he did the last thing. I can't remember whether I have it wrong. Well, I know at least it's been a year since we got that number, minimum, if not more. So to my mind, it tells me that we're probably in the 40s by now. So that's a huge gap that you're going to try to roll back and fix. And it's not something that is going to happen simply by saying no more subsidy without any clear plan as to, okay, what does it mean that no more subsidy, and with the FX rate issue, there's the Electricity Act that has been signed, you know, and so you expect to see government do certain things. Now, bear in mind that they've already started to see some benefits of you know, fixing the FX rate, at least, and I agree with Lemona entirely, which is what I said maybe about a couple of weeks ago or 3 weeks ago. This is a devaluation until we see, you know, a free float and, you know, a freedom of movement within the market. It's not a floating, because you still have 41 or 43 items banned on the central bank list. So there's no freedom of movement in the market until you roll back some of those things and have a clear agenda that yes, funds can come in, funds can go out within clear frameworks and parameters. Now, all of that is needed for business confidence to rise, for investment to happen, for you to begin to see the benefits for the private sector. For the public sector, we're already seeing some benefits in the sense that because the FX rate has been, because the Naira has been devalued, there is more Naira available. And we've been seeing the reports over the last two, fact cycles. There's been more money shared by the states. The question is, what are they using the money for? Is it still going to feed recurrent? Are they using it to create jobs? Are they using it to stimulate the economy? Those are the questions that we need to ask. And that's what's going to move the needle on unemployment. You're now getting more Naira. What are you able to do with it? You know, there's a question around minimum wage, which quite rightly has to go up. We know that the 30K has been in place for a long time. We've seen inflation at 20% plus over an extended period of time. People's income levels have been decimated. So their spending power has been impaired. So you need to do something to enable them, you know, have a living wage. So all of those things have an impact. And until they have a clear, coherent plan around these are the things that we're going to do. These are the areas we'll make interventions. But particularly for me, as I've always said, these are the areas where we remove the shackles on private sector, on private enterprise, and let the private enterprise lead in terms of more investment, you know, ease of doing business, a clear path for them to do things in the right way. That's the only thing that can help move the needle on employment.
Thank you, Phoenix. So my final question on the economy is to Lemona. Lemona, another concern that a number of commentators have had is the number of Nigerians who have been emigrating since 2015, particularly when the APC came into office. They call it the Jakba movement. So do you think Bola Tinubu has done anything so far on the economy that is capable of reversing that emigration trend?
The short answer is no. To be honest, even his very existence, President of the Federal Republic of Nigeria, contributes to a desire for many people to leave the country in the first place. We witnessed assuming without conceding, we take the election results as they are, and more people voted against him than they did for him. This Nigeria's first minority president in a democratically elected in a democratic election. And his coming, the manner of his ascension into office, has left a bitter taste in the mouths of many people. Not because he won and was sworn in, but because of the controversy surrounding his past, the controversy surrounding Jakarta, the viewing of Lagos and his godfathership of Lagos, the disunity that and the ethnic. Sorry, I've actually been speaking to myself. Can you hear me?
Oh, yes, we can hear you. You just literally cut off for a few seconds.
Hello?
We can hear you, Lemona. You cut off for a few seconds, but you're back. Lemona, can you hear us?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Can you hear me?
I can hear you now. Sorry, what was the last thing you heard me say?
I think you only cut out for like a few seconds, so you can more or less you started off. So yes.
So there's a lot of disenchantment, not only around, you know, his being in office, but, you know, around his character, around his personality, but also around the, you know, ethnic and religious tensions that were stoked on his way into being declared winner of the election. Now, all these things combined with the harsh approach that he's taken has caused further disenchantment around the Nigerian, you know, for the Nigerian people that contribute towards the desire to emigrate than the desire to stay. This is perhaps the first president that has gotten into office and there was not a wave of hope or optimism that heralded his entry into office. I mean, even former president, late president, Umaru Musa Yar'Adua, God bless his soul, when he got into office, even though there were significant questions around the integrity of that election, his immediate acceptance of the, you know, the existence of that integrity challenge and his commitment that he displayed immediately towards fixing the electoral process, you know, created some hope and optimism. There's nothing hopeful or optimistic around the Tinubu presidency, you know, nothing that inspires confidence that if we stay around or that, you know, if people stay around and suffer, that there's a new day that's coming. One of the challenges of implementing policies in a haphazard manner, you know, in the manner that he's implemented the subsidy removal, in the manner that he's implementing the currency unification, which is actually just a devaluation, is that the Nigerian people will get all the suffering without the attendant benefits. And people are seeing that. And there's not a willingness to stay behind in the country and continue to suffer. So people who have options are actively exploring those options to see how quickly that they can get out. There's nothing that he has done in the last 30 days or no, it's more than 40 days now. There's nothing that he's done in this time frame that inspires confidence or inspires, you know, a that will reverse that trend. Absolutely nothing at all.
Thank you, Lemona. Once again, we'll leave it to the listeners to judge. But to our final question on the issue of Bola Tinubu's first month in office, Felix, I want us to focus on the politics. A number of commentators said that President Buhari left behind a deeply divided country, divided along religious and ethnic and even gender lines. His cabinet and his appointees were known to be male-dominated. Phoenix, do you think Bola Tinubu has done anything to address these issues since he came into office?
Well, I don't think he has. I don't think he has. I mean, I remember saying that, I mean, when the service chief's appointment, you know, revealed gender balance, ethnic balance. But then when I look at the appointments that he's made across board, and primarily he's been doing special advisors up and down, they seem to be tilted towards the part of the country that he's from. So it's almost like he's towing the Buhari line and has chosen not to try to, you know, heal the country and move the country away from the divisiveness that we saw over the past 8 years. And maybe it's an APC thing. Maybe that's their way. And that's what Nigerians will have to grapple with. I mean, if he does retain the seat, given the legal challenges that are ongoing, but he has done nothing to unite the country. He, to my mind, he hasn't shown that willingness to push inclusiveness, to embrace our diversity. I haven't seen that. I mean, in the appointments that he's making, of course, we all know that by the time it comes to time for him to make the ministerial appointments, that's guided by law. So he really has little wiggle room there, where you can judge a man is in the appointments he makes, where he's not bound by some, you know, federal character or things like that. And we can see from the coterie of people around him that he's very much, you know, comfortable with people who have been with him over a long time, particularly people who have worked with him while he was in Lagos as the governor, people who are mostly of the same ethnicity as him. So I haven't seen anything that shows me that this guy is someone who thinks about unity and, you know, especially given what we saw during the election season, even that we continue to see, you can clearly see that this, while very clearly Buhari, you know, was divisive, but it came to a head during the election because we then saw that particularly from the APC camp, there was an intent to stoke, ethnic, and of course, you know, given the ticket that he ran on, even to an extent, religious differences and exacerbate that. And you've now seen Nigerians, especially when you see social media, particularly on Twitter, there's the fault lines have been widened. People are, it's almost like your Tenso Israel kind of situation. And there are more than enough stupid people on both sides, and you see that every day. But there's a way you can bring things back together as a leader. And he's not doing that, maybe because he's not capable of it, or maybe because he just doesn't care, as to a layman's point. He's not a popular president. He came in with a little over a third of the vote. So he didn't win a majority to come into office. So maybe he's decided to embrace the villainy and just, you know, do whatever he wants.
Thank you, Phoenix. Ilemona.
Yeah.
A number of people on Twitter and APC and Bola Tinubu defenders would say that actually he has taken steps to address issues of diversity. For example, his chief of defense staff is from Southern Kaduna. His chief of naval staff is from, I think, Anambra or Enugu, Admiral Ogala. They say that. His chief of air staff is from Kano State. His national security advisor, Nuhu Rubadu, is from Adamawa. So some people would argue that Bola Tinubu has tried to diversify his team. Is the PDP persuaded by these arguments, Lemona?
No, we're not. And we're not on the basis of, it's not just on the basis of a securing of appointments. I mean, there are quite a significant number of people appointed thus far that are from this part of the country. But I mean, it's not just that. It's the ongoing narrative around which his presidency is mired. His campaign took an obvious religious slant when he became the first presidential, you know, his first major presidential candidate between 1999 and 2023 to choose a Muslim deputy, a Muslim running mate. It was his obvious play towards a part of, you know, a part of the country, towards one base as his way of getting into office. Also, his people have continually stoked the fires of all sorts of ethnic and religious discord. They stoked it in the campaign season, with the objective of benefiting from it. Having benefited from it, you're going to need more than a smattering of appointments to heal that divide and reunify everybody. What you're going to need is a concerted effort, which must include rebuking certain members of his support base who go out and continually stoke the fires. A few days ago, speaking about the chief of defense staff who was appointed from Southern Kaduna, only a few days ago, there was a letter written by a group in Kaduna saying, you got into office on the back of Islam, and yet, you know, the two appointments you've made from Kaduna State, and blah, 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 and you should reverse this thing before we lose our temper, and such and such and such. Unless people who, you know, who take that sort of disposition and openly chastise them with you and disavow, and you make a concerted reach out across all possible divides, you know, that isn't only behind the scenes, but also is being seen to be done. It's an active, you know, openly, it's an open attempt to reunify the country. And we're not seeing anything of that sort. At the moment, on social media, on a daily basis, known voices from his camp constantly stoke the fire. And the way they move, they don't pick, it's not just an outlier. It's a movement. One person takes the lead and then everybody else follows. And you know that it's carefully planned and orchestrated. So no, it's shameful, really. He's not displayed the desire to reunite the country as quickly as possible, you know?
Thank you, Ilemona. Phoenix, the question on this politics is, there doesn't seem to be as much agitation as there was under Jonathan or even Obasanjo or Buhari. Christian lobby groups like the Christian Association of Nigeria or the Pentecostal Fellowship of Nigeria don't seem to be agitating against Bola Tinubu. Islamic groups too don't seem to be agitating against him. And there don't seem to be many protests across the country against him. So isn't that a plus for him that he seems to have calmed the country down? Phoenix?
When you say calm the country down, I don't think we can say that the country is calm, right? Yeah, we might not have. Let's also, you know, bear in mind the difference in the mood 10 years ago and today, in the sense that how you know, the agitations that we saw in the past, how much of a politically vibrant atmosphere we had, and how our civil society was more invested than they've been in the last 5 to 8 years. The agitations and the social consciousness has been left to the people, to the young ones, as we saw during NSARS and all those kinds of things. So it's in that vein that he's come to office. And I'm not holding my breath, because these people all jumped into bed with the APC, and since then they've all kept quiet. I'm not holding my breath that there's going to be significant agitation, unless again it's the young ones who decide that no, they're going to come out. And maybe we'll see that if, for example, during the legal challenges to his, you know, to his presidency, you know, there is a sense that there's been a miscarriage of justice, perhaps we'll see agitation. So there's nothing that tells me that it is because he's there or he's done something to calm the nation down. No, there wasn't much going on before he came into office. And I mean, things are the way they are at the moment because really, I mean, I also think that people are watching to see where things will head. And ultimately that will decide, I mean, how people react. But there's nothing to ascribe to him to say, yes, he has calmed down. Calmed down the nation in what sense? What has he done? Has he spoken to the people since his inaugural address? Has he engaged the people? Have they seen him? Have they, you know, what are the things that he has said, that he has done, that could have calmed down any agitation? So I think people are brow-beaten. I think people, I mean, the guidance that they used to get from certain political actors are not there. or it's not there. So I think, I mean, it will take another conflagration like we saw during NSARS to get people galvanized to push it, to push back. And maybe we may still see that. And so we should not start, you know, celebrating or ascribing any marks to Tinubu at this point in time.
Thank you, Phoenix. Final question will go to Ilemona.
Sorry, can I keep it on that?
Yes, yeah.
People are also afraid. Last time that there was a rash of protests in Nigeria, we saw it brutally repressed on local and international television. And we saw Bola Tinubu taking an aggressive stand on it when he asked the people who were shot at the Lekki toll gate, why were they there, and all of that. So there's also the caution that a lot of people have, that if they attempt any sort of expression of dissatisfaction in other ways than on social media, so if they came to a protest, if they come to a protest, or if they come to a place to exercise their right to freedom of association, to express their grievance against government policy, that there'll be violent repression of that. If you also remember, Bola Tinubu has a long history of the use of all sorts of illegal mechanisms, unconstitutional mechanisms, extrajudicial mechanisms to suppress protests. All that is watching Lagos time after time after time. Protests have been attacked by all sorts of elements on behalf of the Lagos state government. And he cannot claim that he was not aware. So there's the worryness about that, that if we go out onto the streets, what will be the outcome? And having seen, if there's anything that APC achieved with the violent repression of the NSAS protests at the Lekki toll gate and then in Abuja and other places across the country, was that people are now aware of the party's dastardly desire to use extra-constitutional means, unconstitutional means, to attack opponents and repress them. And so there's fear. There's a palpable sense of fear. However, there's also a palpable sense that Nigeria is sitting on a tinderbox and that a small spark would again see people come out in defiance of that fear and could pour out onto the streets to express their grievances. So it looks like a swan, you know, but that's just gliding on water, but paddling furiously underneath. There's something bubbling under the surface. And to reiterate what Phoenix just said, no, there's been nothing that Bola Tinubu has done that anybody can say that he has used this action to calm down the country. Absolutely nothing. So I don't see it.
Well, thank you, Lemonad. You and Phoenix are clearly on the same page on this issue. The final question I was going to ask you in particular with regards to Bola Tinubu is, he has talked about the fact that he wants to run an all-inclusive government and is seeking to broaden his cabinet to include opposition parties. Do you think the PDP will accept his offer and take up a seat in his government if offered, Ilemona?
To the best of my knowledge, as a party, the PDP does not intend to accept any offers from Bola. To the best of my knowledge, I might be wrong, and I speak as an individual, but I've spoken around the party. The PDP doesn't intend, in fact, we believe that his occupation of the office of President of the Federal Republic of Nigeria and its commander-in-chief is illegal and is in violation of the provisions of our
constitution. Sorry to cut you there, Lebanon. I was asking this question because a few days ago, there were pictures of former Senate President Pius Ayim, who was also Secretary to Government and he's also a senior member of the PDP, campaigned for Atiku, himself alongside Oli Sametu, who were both PDP members. They were seen visiting Bola Tinubu in Aso Rock. And the suggestion by the media is that they are possible appointees to his cabinet. So doesn't that contradict what you are saying?
I'm saying as a political party. Now, as individuals, some people may determine that on their own, they they want to resign their membership of the party, and they want to take appointments in Tinubu's cabinet. It's a completely different conversation. As a political party, we believe that his occupation of the office is illegal. There's a reason why we're in court challenging it, challenging the outcome of the election, challenging his qualification to stand for the election in the first place, challenging his integrity and his past, his controversial past and his involvement in what they call it, in, you know, a narcotic trade sometime in the past. We believe that legally he's unsuitable and unqualified to be president of the country. And so we're challenging it all. Now, if a few members of the party resign their membership of the party to go ahead and take up appointments in the cabinet, well, that's on them, you know. But to the best of my knowledge, as a political party, there's no intention to accept any, the party will not be recommending anybody for appointments into Tinubu's cabinet. The party will not be nominating anyone for appointments into any government, any boards or parastatals that are not provided for, or in a manner that's not provided for by the Constitution. There's no political arrangement for a collaboration between the party as a socio-political organization and the Tinubu administration. There's none of that at this time, to the best of my knowledge. He might be reaching out to a few individuals who might, on their own, decide that they want to participate in this cabinet, and that's all up to them. But as a political party, there's no intention.
Thank you, Ilemona. And thank you, Phoenix, because our time is up. So I must also thank our listeners. We apologize, we're not here last week. I can confidently blame Phoenix for that one. This one wasn't my fault. But hopefully, same time next week, we'll see you, and I wish you a fantastic 7 days.
Thanks, Michael, and thanks again, Ilemona, for joining us. Thanks, listeners. Have a great week ahead.
Have a great weekend.